Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, everybody, right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Menno, I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you to talk to us is 201-939-4513. Or if you're on Twitter, you can chime in using hashtag GiantsChat. Lance and I will be monitoring that channel throughout the course of the program. Thank you so much for joining us. And Lance, let's start here because I know Paul and Jeff really covered the Steeler game in mass yesterday. We'll give our opinion on it as the show goes along as well. But as we begin to transition ahead to the Dallas Cowboys, one piece of worry for Giant fans is the injury to Jason Pierre-Paul. Obviously, some news filtering around this morning from Mike Garofolo, Ed Werder. Some of the Giant beat reporters have gotten on top of it as well. In terms of the severity of his injury, whether he'll require surgery or not, nothing's decided yet. The Giants have not made any announcements. A lot of speculation out there. But here's how we'll look at it today. If Jason Pierre-Paul does have to miss time, and again, we don't know if that is or is not the case. We'll find that likely later on today. That's what Ben McAdoo said on his conference call yesterday, Lance. What do you think is the best avenue for the Giants to replace him? The bigger issue here is that Odighizuwa, who was the primary backup most of the year, missed last week with a knee injury. Romeo Aguara stepped in for him, and he was really the primary end on that side once JPP went out at the end of the second quarter in the game against Pittsburgh.
Well, they're limited because the depth chart, as you mentioned, is banged up. It's not just the starters. So, I mean, potentially you could be down not just JPP. You could be back down the guy who's essentially going to step in for him. I think Devon Kennard would be somebody that they would experiment utilizing on the line. They've done that a lot this season.
Especially on third down.
Correct. He would be probably the first guy that would come to mind. You mentioned Okwara. You know, he's gotten some reps this season. And then, you know, they may look to move some defensive tackles out to the edge if they feel confident enough that they can play on the outside as well. I mean, this is the time where you can experiment a little, but Kennard, to me, makes the most sense. He's your most versatile player right now on the roster that could be a linebacker, and also you could bring him down on the line of scrimmage. So I would think he would be the first man up in the event that JPP has to miss some time.
And I think the worry that I have, if Jason Pierre-Paul, in fact, cannot play in this game against Dallas, and again, we do not know if that's the case or not, that to me could have been a huge advantage matchup for the Giants. You look at that Cowboy offensive line, their weakest link on that line is Doug Free. He's a veteran. He's been in the league a long time. But of the pressures the Cowboys have allowed this year to Dak Prescott, many of them have come from his side. In fact, I think Prescott has been stripped for fumbles three times from Doug Free's side, including one in their game last week where the Cowboys managed to slip by the Minnesota Vikings. Brian Robeson had a sack and strip off of Doug Free's edge. So if JPP can't go, yeah, you have Romeo Aguara there. Not the same dynamic you have with Jason Pierre-Paul. Not to mention the run defense brings, and that could really be a game changer.
Well, I mean, I think that's probably the most important thing to emphasize. Everybody gets caught up in the pressures of the sacks. He's arguably the best run stopper in addition to Olivier Vernon in terms of sealing off the edge. So you lose a significant run stopper in the event that he can't play. I mean, I think that they'll have options that could get to the quarterback. But remember, Dallas's offensive line is one of the best in the NFL. It's not like they give up a great deal of pressure to begin with, but you want to be able to slow down Ezekiel Elliott this week. So JPP's presence in terms of stopping the run game is probably even more important than necessarily flustering Dak Prescott in the pocket.
And then, of course, you had Damon Snacks Harrison leave that game last week. He went back in. Ben McAdoo did not seem to express a lot of concern about him in the conference call yesterday. And then you have Jonathan Hankins, who Ben McAdoo termed as being sore on Monday. So we'll see what he can do. He's battling a thigh injury. I think they called it a quad bruise. I heard that thrown around at some point yesterday. And that happens a lot when you'll get kneed or kicked in that quad area, and it can really weaken the muscle a little bit. So there are some injuries, Lance, on the defensive line, and not the game that you want injuries on the defensive line with Ezekiel Elliott coming to town.
Yeah, it gets back to, I mean, this is a game that's about the trenches.
Yeah.
This past game was about the trenches too, John. I mean, they went up against Le'Veon Bell, and clearly he was the first 100-yard rusher that the Giants allowed this season.
And by the way, the rushing defense was worse in the second half without Jason Pierre-Paul on the field.
Well, it wore down because I think, you know, the Steelers said, hey, we've got the Giants where we want them. We have a lead. Now we're going to get in our comfort zone. We're going to pound the football. And that's what they wanted to do. They milked the clock and so forth, and they were able to execute successfully. The Cowboys are going to look to do the same thing. They're going to want to win the battle in time of possession.
Yeah, and the Cowboys love to run the ball once they have
the lead
in the second half. And just to give you an example, the Steelers last week, Le'Veon Bell in the first half, 11 rushes, 31 yards. In the second half, 18 rushes. And in those 18 rushes, he gained 87 yards. So that more than 4 yards per carry there. So the rush game for the Steelers did get better in the second half of that contest. Folks, if you're watching us on Twitter, thank you very much. If you want to watch the rest of the show or listen to it, please head over to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app, where you can check out Big Blue Kickoff Live in its entirety every weekday from noon to 1 on Giants.com and on the Giants mobile app. And now, Lance, let's real quick before we get to the calls. We see you got a full bank of calls here. I want to rapid fire through them today. I know a lot of people have a lot to say about the Steeler game and looking ahead to the Dallas Cowboys. Real quick on the Steelers, and this was our theme last week when we previewed this game, that if the Giants wanted to go to Pittsburgh and beat a team like the Steelers, they were going to have to raise their level of play. Unfortunately, especially on the offensive side of the ball, we saw the same issues you saw against Cleveland the previous week. They gained less than 300 yards of total offense, just as it did against Cleveland last week. The run game was once again inconsistent. Turnovers came back, which you don't like with the two Eli Manning interceptions, but the offense simply is not consistent and productive enough to score points to beat a team like the Steelers, who have a very, very dynamic offense.
Well, we talked about that. They were going to need to, in the event that this became an offensive clinic, they were going to have to be able to exchange touchdowns with the Steelers. And, you know, the Giants weren't able to match the firepower that Pittsburgh presented. You brought up the running game. I'm looking at the numbers, and they did average 4 yards a carry, and that's not terrible. The problem is not a lot of at-bats on the ground. They only carried the ball 14 times. Now, I understand that they were trailing in the second half, but remember, it was a 14-7 game.
And by the way, eight of those 14 came in the first half.
Yeah, so, I mean, they didn't really have a lot of opportunities on the ground. So, I mean, I wouldn't even look at this as a game to say that they took a step back from running the football. I just don't think there were enough opportunities. There was barely a sample size to truly evaluate the running game.
And, of course, the rushing stats were a little bit jaded by the 118-yard run by Paul Perkins. Yeah. Of course, that's going to happen, though. Every team that runs the ball is going to have their average elevated by a long run here or there. But I think, like against the Browns, Lance, there are too many negative-yard runs, too many zero-yard runs, too many one-yard runs, where those had started to go away a little bit in past weeks. I think the team was once again in too many second-and-nines, too many second-and-tens, too many second-and-elevens.
Well, the third down efficiency struggled as well because of all of those struggles that happened on first and second down. It's going to pile up on third down. I mean, this is now another week where they only managed 4 third down conversions, and they were 4 of 13 against the Browns. They were 4 of 11 against the Steelers, and of those 11 third downs, 6 downs were for 6 yards or less, 5, though, were for 7 yards or more. So, you know, it's about a 50-50 split, some manageable, some not so manageable, and that's a reflection of not running the football on some of those early downs to at least get positive yardage. And I think it's also a reflection on the fact that, and Ben McAdoo brought this up on the conference call, the Giants only had 4 penalties, but all 4 were on the offense, and all 4 were in killer situations throughout the game. They absolutely killed the flow of the game. You had holding penalties, false start penalties. One came in the end zone that led to 2 points for the opposition. I mean, those are things that we've seen over the course of the season. There's been some clean games where the Giants eliminate the procedural penalties, and then there's been games where all of a sudden they come back to the forefront, and the procedural penalties are absolute killers to drives for the Giants because they never seem to be able to recover from that.
Not to mention the offensive pass interference call, which also short-circuited a drive there in the first half. By the way, just to keep an eye on this, the NFL might adjust that third down efficiency. For some reason at the game, they did not count the Giants' safety in the Flowers
hold. I noticed that.
As
correct.
A third down failure. So that might actually turn into 4-for-12.
Yeah, I did notice that when I was tallying up. I'm glad you brought that up because I was wondering,
too. Yeah, I don't know why they didn't count that either.
But the only thing that I'm thinking about is there was a penalty on the play. Now, I know the penalty counted, but sometimes that may factor into what they look as a legitimate third down opportunity that counts as a play. That's the only thing that I'm thinking may have
That's
been the
point.
Caveat involved
sure.
in that, because there was a penalty on the play. I went through during the game, I had to listen. I'm like, wait a minute, I got 12 third downs here. Why am I only seeing 11? So I was thinking the same thing. It would be interesting to see if we could get clarification on that.
Now, Lance, defensively, you talked a little bit about how the Steelers ran the ball more in the second half, but I think we saw another issue, and I wrote about this in my section of our Cover 3 article that was on Giants.com yesterday, where Lance, myself, and Dan Salamone, our very talented staff writer here, kind of gave positions where we thought the Giants and areas where we thought they shouldn't or need to improve to try to beat Dallas this week. And the area I chose was on defense, doing a better job of covering the middle of the field, specifically against tight ends and running backs. And I think that's kind of been an issue for a lot of this year. And Ladarius Green, who, to your credit, you brought up a lot in the pregame show and on these shows last week. He had a monster game, more than 100 yards of receiving. He had a big touchdown in the game as well. And You're facing Jason Witten this week, and you're facing another running back that's an excellent receiver, not quite as good as Le'Veon Bell, but a quality receiver out of the backfield in Ezekiel Elliott. And I think what I'm seeing, and I'll try to look at the tape this week to confirm it, the Giants with their corners, we've talked about this, Lance, they're able to play a lot of man-to-man defense because they're just that good at covering, right? So you got Jenkins, DRC, and Eli Apple manning up wide receivers. And once again, this week did a great job. Antonio Brown scored, but overall, Janoris Jenkins did a very good job on him. He had to make two very, very tough catches to get his stats where they were.
Including the touchdown one, which he was all over him, Jenkins, on that.
Correct. But what happens when you put your corners into man coverage? That means both your linebackers and you and or your safeties are going to have to play man defense against athletic tight ends and athletic running backs. And for any tight end or safety in the league, that can be a very tough cover. And I think that's where you're running into some issues where linebackers are struggling carrying tight ends down the seam. We saw Landon Collins mess up his coverage on Ladarius Green. I think that was on the touchdown, if I'm not mistaken.
It was, yeah. He bit on it, and then Green ran right by him and got the easy score.
And Green really didn't even make that much of a fake. Landon Collins just crashed down for some reason, and Green got by him for the touchdown. And then the Steelers used, I think, a lot of screen passes. They were concerned, and I talked to Dominic Rogers-Cromartie about this after the game, and he says, look, we knew they were going to run screens. We didn't think they were going to run that many screens.
Volume was high.
And I think the Steelers understood the Giants had been getting after the quarterback real well. One way you slow down that pass rush is by running a lot of screen passes, whether it's to the running back or even to wide receivers. So Eli Rogers have the one quick wide receiver screen that he converted a 3rd-and-17 on in the second quarter. So to me, those are a few things I think you have to look at here, carrying over from Pittsburgh to Dallas, dealing with Witten, Gavin Escobar, their second tight end, who can also make plays down the seam, down the field, and Ezekiel Elliott coming out of the backfield, along with Lance Dunbar, if they use him in certain
situations. Well, there's a lot of balance on that Cowboys team, plus some of the other wide receivers, too. I mean, Cole Beasley has done a lot of damage out of the slot.
Yep.
Terrence Williams has made plays. You know, it's similar to Pittsburgh, where you got to pick your poison. And if you're too cautious, it can maybe be helpful. But at the same time, if you overdo it with one particular facet of the opposition, then that's going to open up opportunities elsewhere. And that's exactly what the Steelers did. The Steelers said to themselves, we'll see what the Giants do. Are they going to focus on Bell? Are they going to focus on Antonio Brown? And if they choose to do that, maybe we'll get some favorable matchups with Ladarius Green down the middle of the field. And that's exactly what played out. So when you go up against the Cowboys, well, you got to deal with Dez Bryant. You got to deal with a lot of the other weapons that you named. And then if you leave Jason Witten open, you know, he could do a lot of damage. If you go back to week one, John, Witten and Beasley did the most damage against the Giants. Now, that was Prescott's first career start. What they were doing is the Cowboys were just taking everything underneath because the Giants took away the deep pass. You know, Dez was very quiet, so Prescott wanted to stay in manageable third downs. They ran the ball. They didn't run the ball that effectively, and they just dumped it off to Witten and Beasley.
I can tell you real quick, Beasley, 8 catches, 65 yards against the Giants in week one. Witten, 9 catches, 66 yards.
17 catches between the two of them.
Correct.
I mean, they did the heavy lifting in the middle of the field. Now, the offense has come a long way for Dallas. They've had a lot of new things that they've added, and they've had a little bit more experience under their belt, so I'm sure they're going to give the Giants some different looks. But the priority has to be, you know, slowing down tight ends, no matter what uniform they wear. I mean, it goes beyond Ladarius Green. Zach Miller, before he got hurt in the Bears game, had a big game. Tyler Eifert did damage against the Giants on one of the very first plays in that game. Laundry list of tight ends that have been very successful against this Giants defense.
But really, Lance, and this will be the last thing we hit before your calls at 201-939-4513. We talk about the defense and the issues. That's all well and good. The defense played well enough for the Giants to win that game. Going in, what do we say? The Giants have to score a minimum of 24, probably 27 if they want to win the game, right? Well, how many points did the Steelers score? They scored 24. That's about right where we thought they would wind up, within a field goal or a touchdown here or there. But the Giants' offense, they finished with 14. Let's be honest, they really only scored 7.
Late touchdown.
Because you had a garbage time touchdown with the Steelers in prevent defense. Victor Cruz had 0 targets in the game. Odell Beckham had 1 target in the first half, then a whopping 15 and a half number 2. And you just wonder if this offense over these final 4 games now can figure out the inconsistencies that have plagued them for the first 12. Can they figure it out? Do they have time to figure it out? What's the problem? Why are they being so inconsistent week to week? Why can't they get all 3 of their or 4 of their wide receivers with Roger Lewis involved and their tight ends all going in the same game. It just seems like these are issues that have come up time and time again, and they still have not been able to figure out how to get them fixed.
Well, one of the things that you just pointed out, and I brought up in the Cover 3 piece that you were alluding to earlier, is the balance that the Giants had in the six-game win streak, where it wasn't just 16 targets to Odell Beckham. Everybody was pretty much involved. And that doesn't mean that everybody was getting five targets, but you had games pretty much on a weekly basis where at least eight players, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, each game were getting at least one or two catches. And that hasn't happened in the last two contests. Remember, Sterling Shepard had no targets the previous week, John. Now Victor Cruz has none in the game against the Steelers. So that's two straight weeks where one of your top three wide receivers did not have one target. Whereas that was nothing that we talked about in previous weeks because there was much better balance. And there was also better balance in terms of the run game and the pass game. In the Browns game, and yes, I understand it's Cleveland. Cleveland's different than Pittsburgh, but they ran the ball 27 times, and they threw the ball 27 times. During the winning streak, there was only one game. That was the Baltimore Ravens game, where the ratio was higher than 2-1 in terms of pass to run. Every other game, it's been 2-1 or less, and that's exactly where you want to be, no matter what offense you are. And they got away from that, and that, to me, has affected the continuity of the offense. I thought at a 14-7 game, you know, there was still ample opportunities to run the football. They were not distanced enough from Pittsburgh, John, Sunday, even though it did seem like that. If you watch that first half, you know, it seemed like the score was maybe 21-0. As opposed to what it really showed on the box score. But I think that it was still close enough where they didn't really need to abandon the run. I think there were opportunities where perhaps they could have gotten a little bit more balance.
Yeah, and in fairness, Eli Manning wasn't at his sharpest in that game. And that was the second straight week where I don't think he played his best football. You know, another penalty for Eric Flowers. We could talk about that. Eli Manning did not get hit a ton in the game, but I think from time to time he felt pressure. Some that was there. Other times pressure that wasn't there. Another something we've talked about over the course of the year. And in terms of, you know, getting targets, everybody, I think one problem too, Lance, is Giants aren't getting a ton of snaps. Their time of possession is second worst in the league. They're right in the middle of the league in terms of number of snaps per game. So they're not getting, like you said, the at-bats necessary to get everybody
involved.
Well,
and turnovers plays a role in that too, John.
Yes, it does.
And actually, the Giants had 21 turnovers all of last season. Well, now they're at 21. You still got four games to go. So in all likelihood, they're going to surpass last season's total. But just think about it. If the turnovers are up, less possessions, less opportunities.
And one other thing I'll touch on, too, is the fourth down stuff. Because the Giants had three opportunities to kick field goals in this game. They tried to go for a touchdown on all three. If you kick a field goal on all three, maybe the formula of the game changes a little bit. Now, that's Monday morning quarterbacking. But for fans, and this is why I bring it up, I'm not saying Ben McAdoo did the wrong thing. By no means. The point I'm trying to make is that fans always want to go for it on fourth down, and you don't see a downside. Well, there is a downside to not making it on fourth down. And you aren't going to make it on fourth down every single time. So just something to keep in mind going forward when you're debating between field goal or going for it, even in the red zone on fourth and short.
The debate about how aggressive do you want to
be.
But what I would say is from the sake of a track record perspective here, it did follow the principles that the Giants have been following in previous games. I mean, Ben McAdoo's been very aggressive over the last few weeks, so it's not like, wow, where did this come out of? Same thing like Mike Tomlin going for two. You don't question it because it's almost part of their identity. Part of the Giants' identity this season is going for it on fourth down, and, you know, those were manageable downs where it wasn't as if, you know, you were reaching for a, well, one of them I think was fourth and nine, if I'm correct. But
that
was later
in the
game.
Very late, yes.
But the other two, we're talking about, you know, 3 to 1 yard that you need to pick up. So, I mean, I really don't think that was a stretch given the circumstances of the game.
Absolutely, and like you said earlier, you're not going to beat the Steelers with field goals. You're going to have to score a touchdown.
Yeah.
So, 201-939-4513. Your call is the rest of the way again. I know a lot of you guys have a lot to say, so I'm not going to rush you, but I want you to be succinct with your points. Get right to them. If you have a question or comment, get to them, then we'll answer. We'll knock you off the air, all right? Spencer in New York, you're going to lead us off first. Spencer, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Thanks for
letting me get through, but listen every day. Listen every day.
Thank you.
I had a question. I mean, we've been talking about it. The offense, we're waiting for it all year. Doesn't seem to be coming around. You look at last year, you subtract Reuben Randle, who I think we can call a net negative overall. You add Sterling Shepard, who seems good route runner, good hands. You bring back Victor Cruz, good leader, solid player. And the offense has gotten worse. So Was it Tom Coughlin's influence? Is that playing a factor in this? What do you guys think about that?
You know, I don't know. Everything I was told the last couple of years, Spencer, to be completely honest with you, is that Tom was fairly hands-off with the offense, and it was Ben McAdoo's show. It was his offense, and the Giants did what they did, and it was Ben McAdoo's offense. I mean, I think from a visual perspective, just watching the game, it didn't look like Tom Coughlin's offense out there. It looked like Ben McAdoo's offense, and I don't think I'm seeing that much different this year than what they were doing the prior 2 years. Spare the production. The results are different. I don't think the process, though, is that much different. So if you want to pinpoint a couple reasons here, Spencer, I think one you have to pinpoint is one that Lance and I just mentioned. I don't think Eli Manning's playing as well this year as he did last year. I think that is a legitimate point. Look at his numbers.
Absolutely.
I don't think it's hard to argue. And look, Eli's had great Decembers before. He might turn it around, and his numbers at the end of the year might look exactly like they did the last couple of seasons. Who knows? We'll see. But that's the one thing I'll bring up, Lance. I'd like to get your take on something you might be able to pinpoint here on the offense and why it's different.
Well, one of the things I keep rehashing is the turnovers, too. I mean, you can't overlook that. You had more opportunities to get into the end zone last season. I'm just talking about pure possessions. You know, forget how much yardage you got. They had more at-bats. You know, that's the key term. So that's a distinct difference, I think, between last season and this season. You also had a few extra defensive scores last season. Remember, defensive scores, you know, tack on to points per game as well. Special teams touchdowns, too. You know, those things you can't overlook. That all gets added into the offensive production, even though technically it should be separate because the offense didn't produce those types of points. So those, to me, are the two main differences. The additional defensive and special team scores last season, as well as the less turnovers that they had last season. I think that's a big contribution. And then, you know, the other factor is, you know, keep in mind, as an offense has more and more film on itself, teams and defenses see some trends and track records. You know, this is the third season of this offense. And Ben McAdoo, I'm not saying that the Giants' offense is becoming predictable. Don't get me wrong, but it's just like a rookie quarterback. The rookie quarterback, the first five games, probably the rookie's going to catch these defenses off guard because you don't really know a lot about them. And then by the time you get to week 7, week 8, week 9, all of a sudden defenses catch up with the rookie, like we're seeing with Carson Wentz a bit and the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think that could be a factor as well.
And Spencer, specifically, Lance mentioned how the special teams and defensive touchdowns affects points. That's absolutely true, and I think what lends to that theory, the Giants are only gaining around 48 or so fewer yards per game. So, yeah, could that 48 fewer yards turn into one extra score? Sure, but I think part of that, like Lance said, has to do with the defense and special teams setting, not only scoring themselves, but setting up the offense for a short field, which you saw a lot of last year, and you're not really getting that as much this season as well.
Right, right. And then another thing, it seems like every big spot all year, whether they're going for it on fourth down or it's a huge third and short, it seems like it's always going to Will Tye. And I can't fathom it. And you saw it on Sunday how the Steelers, that, you know, a lot of teams have all-world players like Odell Beckham. And the Steelers are able to, on a third and short, where they're not going to hand off the Bell or their back, where they can run a quick outside short pass, whether it's, you know, a screen pass or just a little quick slant to Brown. Why can't the Giants figure out a way to run something like that to Beckham? I feel like McAdoo had this, he was this offensive mind, and we had these, you know, these things were coming around, but I'm starting to wonder if maybe the fact the offense picked up so much steam the last 2 years was because of the fact that Beckham was new on the scene, an all-world receiver, and nobody could cover him. The offense, it made McAdoo look like a great offensive mind. But now the teams are rolling coverage, and the book is on, you know, how to stop Beckham, how to slow the Giants' offense. He's not coming up with anything new and creative to get first downs, you know, score points, basically. I don't know what you guys' take is on that.
Yeah, Spencer, you know what? I think it's fair. We haven't seen Beckham get the ball a ton on third and short, but I think we did see Sterling Shepard get targeted a ton on third and five or less, especially in the first 10 games or so of the year. He was a pretty constant target for Eli Manning. And thanks for the call, Spencer. We appreciate it, man.
Yeah, early in the season, Sterling Shepard was probably one of the most successful players in the NFL on third down. I mean, that has dipped since because the team overall has struggled. But early start of the season, I mean, all Eli would look for is Sterling Shepard, which is surprising because you wouldn't necessarily think that you'd put that much faith in a rookie early on. You'd maybe go to your veterans.
You do often like to go to the slot receiver, though, on third down and third and short. They got the two-way release. You can make those short little slants or little out routes, and you can convert that way.
Well, the other thing I wanted to add to Spencer's point about Will Tye, and I know he wasn't bringing up Eli's interceptions. He was talking more about third downs, but somebody on Twitter the other day felt that every time Eli's been throwing interceptions this season, Will Tye's been the target. Now, Eli has 12 interceptions all the season, and I went back and looked. Will Tye's only been targeted twice of those 12 interceptions. So for anybody who thinks the narrative is that every time Eli goes to Will Tye, something bad happens, the facts don't necessarily add that up because, as I mentioned, 12 interceptions for Eli Manning, just two of them were in the direction of Will Tye, and one of them, by the way, was a phenomenal play by Jordan Hicks of the Philadelphia Eagles who dove into the passing lane at the last second to make the pick, and you got to sometimes just tip your cap to the opposition.
And by the way, similarly, I thought it was a phenomenal play by Lawrence Timmons, too. You know, I don't think you can kill Eli in that first pick. I thought it was just a great play by Timmons, to be quite honest with you. You want to get on Eli for throwing it across his body, fading away the other way, and then roll out to Shepard. That's fine. I thought Tim had just made a great play. And quite frankly, it was a nice play by Ryan Shazier, too, hitting Will Tye maybe a split second before, but as the ball got there to prevent the conversion on that fourth and one.
Yeah, two plays by linebackers, and that's where the experience of the Steelers' defense is. But I would agree with you. You know, a lot of people are looking at that interception, and Eli even admitted that he could have put a little more mustard on that, a little bit more height. But you know what Lawrence Timmons said to the media? I went back and listened. Timmons said, when that pass first went up, he said to himself, I have no chance of getting this interception. Then all of a sudden, he felt that he was picking up some speed, and all of a sudden, he was able to reach up high enough. Because if you go back and look at the replay, John, he intercepts that at the highest peak of his reach. It wasn't one of those things where he just went right into his chest. He had to leap up all the way up and get both hands up to get that interception.
And if you look at Larry Donnell, who was getting ready to receive the pass, he was jumping forward as well. So Donnell was going to have to leap to make that catch. So I don't think Manning had much margin for error in terms of putting even more air underneath that ball, because if you lob it too much, then the safety's going to come over and hit Donnell before he can make the play.
So, or he overthrows him and it's intercepted that way too.
Right. So I don't think you can really get on Eli for that Lawrence
Timmons pick. I would agree.
I thought it was just a heck of a defensive play. Let's go to Dre in Atlanta. He's up next. Dre, what's going on, pal?
Hey, Lance. Hey, John. What's going on?
Hi, Dre.
Doing well, Dre. What do you got?
Man, let me tell you. I sat down and looked at that film, and I'm going to tell you where a lot of things I see wrong. One, when you brought Donnell in that play, he hasn't played in about 5-6 weeks since he came off the bye. And the first, if I'm a defensive player, the first thing I'm going to realize is the ball is coming up, is going to Donnell. You know, that's the first place I'm doing, especially if I'm looking at film of past games. I already know that it's going to be a seam route to Donnell.
Wait, hold on. If he hasn't played and done anything in 5 weeks, why would you assume that he's going to be the number one target on a play?
Well, it's goal line. He's 6'6", and If the narrative is the Giants have problems in the red zone, even though during the winning streak we've done better.
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't come in for any other play other than the goal line play. I'm thinking he's going to be the number one read on the target. That's just me. That's what I'm thinking. Because as soon as I watched it, I said, the ball's going to Donnell. Now, regardless if he had caught the pass and it was intercepted, that was still my thinking, that the ball was going to Donnell. Secondly, I think, you know, yes, contrary to what you believe, Lance, yes, it's kind of predictive. The offense is kind of predictable. You know, I've said earlier, if you move around Cruz and Shepard and let Cruz be a target, either number one or number two out of the slot and third down, because that was his claim to fame when he was in there. You know, other than the New Orleans game, when he played that one play in the slot, well, I think he was an outside. He did a crossing route, and then he took the 48-yard run before he fumbled. Other than that, we haven't seen Cruz run that route. It's either a dig or a go route.
I think that's fair. Part, not using Cruz more in the slot, if that's your criticism, he hasn't been in there a lot, according to the numbers. I get where you're coming from on that.
Right, because if you look at the cut-ups from Shepard when he was in college, he ran outside also. Now against the Steelers, he did play outside when they ran with the two wide receiver set. He did play outside, but Cruz wasn't inside. It was Roger Lewis played in the slot. So it seems like, I mean, the writing's on the wall. It seems like Cleveland's being slowly phased out, and this might be his last year with the Giants because you haven't utilized him. And he has been open on some of his routes and hasn't been looked at. Or he's a decoy. But the fact of the matter is, Odell is a great player. He's a great wide receiver, and I love the ball in his hands. But to make him a better wide receiver, you have to utilize the weapons around him. And I think on some of them plays, when you're force-feeding to Odell, it's, you know, you're pretty much saying, we don't have anything else. And that's when you start shifting the coverage over, because it seems like from the outside, you have no faith in your receivers. When your receivers don't even get target once. Same thing with Shepard.
What's your next point, Trey? We got you. We understand.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like I said, actually last week when I spoke to PDOT, if we utilize our weapons, at least let them know that, hey, you can't sleep on this guy here because we're going to get him the ball. You know, what it does is makes that defense honest because you don't know where the ball is going. You know, so Odell can do whatever he do, but when you start hitting Cruz, then you start hitting Perkins out of the backfield, you know, even though we're going to hopefully get Verlaine back for this game, when you start hitting your other targets, they start shifting the personnel over to them, leaving Odell open, and you can start hitting Odell.
Now, Dre, in fairness, I feel like the Giants have still targeted the running backs in the passing game. Rashad Jennings has had four or five catches in the past two or three games. So in terms of throwing to the running backs, they still are doing
Perkins.
That.
I was talking about Perkins.
Rashad. But what's the difference between Perkins or Jennings coming out of the backfield? You're still throwing to the running back.
Right, but the thing is, what it does is, we've done a sweep, we've done a screen, and we've done, a run. But when Perkins back there, you know, he runs out, and then the linebacker's not shifting over to his side, so he's open. And then not only that, I trust Perkins in open space against a single defender more so than I trust Rashard.
That's fair.
That's why.
Okay. Thanks, Dre.
But that's taking my call.
Appreciate it, man. No worries.
I also think you got to be careful about, moving running backs in and out because, to me, from what I've seen, John, I think when Jennings has gotten a few carries consecutively, he's actually been much more effective as opposed to, taking this running back in, moving that running back out. I remember, that was some of the issues that was apparent last season. But Jennings, when he – and even go back to the Steelers game, he had a 5-yard run. He had a 6-yard run. There is some validity behind when a running back can get into rhythm – and you don't want to necessarily throw another guy in just to ruin that.
Yeah, and I agree. I think Perkins is probably better in space, making guys miss. I think Jennings is probably, the stronger bruising between the tackles type of back. And Perkins, to his credit, has gotten a lot better in pass protection. Mike Sullivan brought that up a couple weeks ago at his press conference.
Especially with the Cleveland game.
No question.
Yeah.
So he's gotten better there, no doubt about it. 201-939-4513. Bob in Parsippany is coming up next. Bob, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. What's up?
Yesterday, I was listening to a New York sports radio program,
Okay. And
they reported that one of the Pittsburgh players said that one of the Giant wide receivers was tipping off plays. Specifically, he said if the receiver adjusted his gloves before the play, it was going to be a pass, and if there was no adjustment, it was going to be a run. Have you guys heard anything about this? If the Giants are aware of it?
Bob, I read the article, and if I read the article, I'm sure the Giants read the article, and here's why I don't think every part of the article is right. If Mike Mitchell really had that tell and he knew that, there's no way he's going to go into the media and tell the world that before he plays the Giants, because then all the Giants are going to look at what they do pre-snap and change it. Now, I was talking to Carl Banks about this because I saw the same story, and Lance and I had this conversation with him last week.
The timing of it is crazy.
Right. When he was playing, we say, Carl, people talk about tips and guys tipping plays. Are there certain things that guys do to tip plays? And he told the stories about, former offensive linemen, when they wiggled their fingers, it meant it was a sweep. When they had their feet a certain way, it meant he was pulling. So, yeah, guys do little things like that to tip people off. But do I think everything Mike Mitchell said in that article is true? Absolutely not, because if it was true, he wouldn't have said it publicly to give the Giants an advantage before the game. You know what I'm saying?
I didn't realize that it was before the game.
It was last Friday that article came out.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. But right. I know that people do tip off stuff. I remember Ozzie Umenyori, he used to rely on certain of his opponents, depending on how they put their, their hand in the ground, would tip him off to whether it was a pass.
Well, Bob, it's like the game of poker.
And if this was true, it would be a, you know, one of the, it could be a part of the reason why the running game is so bad and why the on the play of the offensive line in general has been so poor. You know, if somebody knows what's coming, you got a problem.
Well, I mean, that's if you buy into, obviously, the validity of that story, which we're saying I don't think there's much substance behind that. And once again, the running game did show progress in the three games before the Steelers game. So, I mean, it's been up and down, but, you know, they did run for over 100 yards in the three previous games. And I mentioned in the Steelers game, they had 4 yards per carry. Problem is, they only ran the ball 14 times.
And, Bob, remember, too, if one wide receiver outside is doing something to give it tell on a play, if you're a defensive tackle or a defensive end on the other side of the field, you're not going to be able to see that anyway, and that's not going to be able to get communicated so it helps everybody on the defense either.
Well, it would be something that would be fairly easy to check out on film, I would guess, and I hope even, you know, I hope it's not true, but if I hope they at least check it out.
I'm sure they will if it is.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, thanks again. Bye.
Players
appreciate it.
Have tendencies across the board, and key is to make sure that your tendencies are not apparent for the opposition to see that you do have some trends.
Yeah, one thing Banks always tells me is you can see by looking at the running back and how he's leaning and if he's on his toes or his heels and are his
hands
on
his
knees
thighs
or are they on his hips. And that can sometimes tell you whether or not the running back expects to get the ball on that play. So it's little things like that. Some players are better at hiding things. Some players aren't. It's just the way it goes. I forget what movie it was. Was it, remember the Titans where they were trying to figure out if the kid was going to pass rush into Oklahoma drill and if the knuckles turn white when his hands are in the ground?
No, you know which one that was? That was the one about the Eagles, the guy trying to make the team with Mark Wahlberg.
That's what it was.
When he's in the room and he's showing him when his knuckles go down. Yes, correct. Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of that.
It's based on a true story. That's the only thing I can tell you that I remember.
Yeah, the,
I don't remember the name.
The
special teamer from the Eagles, yeah. Name escapes me.
I can't remember. Invincible,
I'll look it
thank
up.
You.
Invincible.
Was
okay.
Vince Papale. That's why
yes,
it was Invincible. That's right.
It.
Thank you,
yep.
Dave Dominic. Good
a...
job.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Dave Dominic also cleared up your issue on the safety. Basically, if it's not a rushing attempt, a pass, or a sack, it does not credit a third down failure. Since it's a penalty, the play technically never happened.
Correct. Well, that's,
so that's
when
why
it's a penalty,
it doesn't count.
It results in no play.
Correct.
Yeah.
Which is so. Which is why it was not counted as a failure. Correct. So
absolutely, that makes 100%.
He confirmed it based off of the NFL stat handbook. Let's go to Nugs in Kansas City. Nugs is up next. How are you, Nugs?
Yeah, how's it going, you guys?
What are you doing in Kansas City, Nugs?
Yeah, I moved down here. I'm going to be living down here for a few more months.
Well, Nugs, let me tell you.
Seattle after that.
Let me tell you. Smart move getting out of Minnesota before December.
Hey, I'm
well done.
I'm loving it. No, you know, they are. They're still funny down here.
Yeah, right. No question. Well, what's on your mind today, bud?
Okay, I just kind of wanted to echo a little bit of what other callers have already said. I do believe that we hired Ben McAdoo because he was an offensive-minded coach. I do think that with him being a coordinator under Coughlin, that Coughlin would have of an influence as far as telling him to make sure he mixes it up a little bit better. Okay, we still, you know, I think it's time to, just like Lance said, we were only down 14-7. Opportunity to run the ball still. I don't understand why we just totally abandoned the run. It's almost like Ben McAdoo has his ego wrapped up in of the passing game.
I don't think it's an ego thing, Nugs. I think what he sees is that my team is trailing a high-powered offense. We got to score points. The running game hasn't gotten explosive plays all year long. Even when it's been effective, it hasn't gotten a lot of, you know, 10-plus, 20-plus runs, things like that. And I think he believes, Ben McAdoo, and this I think goes back to why you oftentimes see those three wide receiver sets. Ben McAdoo, in his heart of heart, believes the most talented players on his team that make the most plays consistently and the biggest plays most consistently are the guys at wide receiver. And I think also, to a certain extent, when the chips are down, Eli says, you know what? You know who is on my team that I know can make a big play? Odell Beckham Jr.
Odell Beckham.
So he might end up looking for him a little bit more, too.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I just feel that I just feel like a little bit that he's being outcoached a little. You know what? And that's enough to make. I'll just take it off the air.
Yeah, real quick.
And when Seattle had Percy Harvin, I'm not saying that.
Hey, Nugs, it sounds like connection. Your phone line's dying on us a little bit. I'm guessing he's going to go the Beckham on returns route? Is that where he was going with Percy Harvin?
Well, I mean,
they
used Percy Harvin on offense as well, so he may have been just in terms of maybe how Seattle utilized Percy Harvin before, obviously, he was dealing with the injuries and the migraines. But, I mean, we've seen some end-arounds where they've involved Odell Beckham in. I mean, they're moving him around.
Shepard had a 22-yard end-around last
year. He had against Cleveland. But Beckham was involved, I think it was the Jennings touchdown, if I'm correct, which I thought was a very good run play.
The fake end-around to the little swing pass.
You know, like I said, they've moved guys around. It's just a matter of
– and that was creative, too, by the way.
Yeah, correct. The execution just hasn't been consistent enough. You know, everybody's talking about, you know, are there signs? I feel like we're overanalyzing. We're reading into everything. More often than not, it simply comes down to execution. And if the execution is not there consistently, if somebody misses a block, if a wide receiver can't get separation, you know, that's what it really comes down to. I mean, most of these players who have been productive were here last season, and we've seen what numbers they're capable of putting up. But, you know, if Eli Manning's not getting the deep throws, that's one thing that's taken a back seat. As I mentioned, if the run blocking is not as consistently as it was, you know, that's another thing that contributes. The penalties. I mean, to me, there's so many factors that are impacting execution right now.
And by the way, you hope that Justin Pugh gets back too, and maybe that'll give the running game a boost against the Cowboy defense. While in the middle of the league in terms of yards, and actually top 10 in the league in terms of points allowed, they've got a lot of, you know, bend but no break, and their time of possession helps their defense as well. You can run the ball against the Cowboys defense. They're actually, I think, fourth or fifth in terms of yards allowed per game on the ground, but yards per carry, they're actually in the bottom half of the league, which means teams are not running it against them a lot, but when they do, they've had some level of success. One of the reasons the Cowboys have had a lot of leads in these games, so teams are trying to throw the ball to, you know, come back in the second
playing
half.
Playing catch-up, yeah.
201-939-4513. Roy in South Carolina up next. Roy, thanks for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. How are you?
Great. Nice talking with you, John and Lance. The Steelers game, it was amazing. That was my first NFL game I've ever gone to.
Oh, wow.
Very nice.
Did you have fun?
I'm originally from Manhattan, but we had some friends who grew up just outside of Pittsburgh, about 30 minutes, and so they said we planned it actually in the springtime to come, and
nice.
So we made the trek up there, and it was just great. And I got to tell you something about Pittsburgh fans. They are gracious, kind, and good sports.
Really? Okay, good to know.
Unbelievable. And let me tell you, we had a great giant turnout. Fan base, but unfortunately we didn't win that one. But my biggest question for you guys was, do we see that, what do you think is the biggest problem we're not targeting Cruz?
It's a really good question, and we don't have a great answer. We talked about it last week a little bit, Lance, one, and I think Nugs or Dre brought this up, I forget who brought it up, that maybe you want to try to get him some more snaps in the slot.
Yeah, in terms of maybe giving him some favorable matchups, I think that's a part of it. You know, I brought this up before, Roy. While the targets are down and the production is down from what we used to see in him, he has still made so many critical catches in games this season that have helped the team seal victories or get the go-ahead score and so forth. So it's amazing to me for somebody who, you know, doesn't have a lot of at-bats, a lot of opportunities, he's made the most out of his limited opportunities. The thing is now, how do you increase those opportunities? So instead of getting maybe one big catch out of Victor Cruz every game, you get two to three big catches out of him. That's the challenge right now.
I have noticed that he did make some clutch catches in the in previous games. So, well, you know, and I was really kind of hoping for a salsa dance in Pittsburgh, I swear to God. But,
well, the Giants would have liked it too, Roy, trust me.
I know. Well, listen, I just wanted to touch base with you guys. And I tried to call Friday. I couldn't get through because I was really going to see if I can catch you guys and just say hey, but we'll try to make it another game. But it was the most fun I've ever had. We tailgated at three blocks away from the stadium.
Nice.
Cool. Met a bunch of Steelers fans that were feeding us. Giants fans were feeding us. It was just fantastic.
Thank you, Roy.
Very nice, Roy. Appreciate the phone call.
And I'm happy you had a great time. Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, it's two of the most historical franchises in NFL history.
And two great fan bases.
Two fan bases that also well-traveled. So you combine both of those factors, it doesn't surprise me that that was his experience.
And you know what? I hadn't really heard much. You know, Giants are a different conference. What Steeler fans are like. It's good to hear that they were, you know, good sports. I know from being in Pittsburgh a lot, and I cover a lot of college football and basketball in Pittsburgh, so I'm there, you know, three, four, five times a year. And it doesn't matter what time of year I'm there. When you're in a cab or in an Uber or whatever it is going around the city, the only thing people are talking about is the Steelers.
Well, understandable.
Maybe you'll get the Penguins in, like, April or something like that in May.
They have been pretty successful in recent history.
But you're getting Steeler talk. That's what people are really concerned about.
Well, they don't have an NBA team.
Nope.
So it would make sense that a lot of their resources
been good, though.
Go. Pirates have been good in recent history, but a long period of time where...
Since they've won.
Yes. I mean, we got to go back to Andy Van Slyke and Barry Bonds if you really want to go to the time period where they were making some noise in the National League.
That was the last time they won a playoff series, right?
Well, that was in the 90s, yes.
Yeah.
Early 90s. So,
then, yeah, 92. They had the... They never got to the World Series, though. They lost to the Braves in the NLCS on the... Lonnie Smith that scored on Gary Pendleton's game-winning hit?
I mean,
that
was during the time where the Braves were dominating also.
Oh, yeah.
Winning the pennant.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Bobby Bonilla was on those teams as well.
Yeah, Bobby Bonilla, Barry Bonds, and you mentioned Andy Van Slyke.
Doug Drayback,
Mike LaValle, the catcher.
Yeah. Those are the old-school Pirates. It's been a long time. I mean, Andrew McCutcheon and so forth.
Sid Breen at first base, right?
Another one. That's a good one. Yeah,
and then he later went to the Braves.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm having memories of Topps trading cards.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, so.
A little Dunruss, 201-939-4513. The Pirates did win a wild card game or a series in 2013, Dave. Oh, they won the playing
they beat
game
the
in
Reds.
2013.
I believe they beat the
but
Reds.
But that's not a playoff series now. I'm not giving you a series for a playing game. Sorry. You got to win. You got to win a best out of five or a best out of seven for me to give you a series. And I love the playing game, and I'm not counting that as a series victory here. Okay?
No, I would agree with your classification. I think the biggest takeaway from what just transpired is the fact that not only is Dave doing his NFL homework, but he's also on top of the baseball history too. So, I mean, the versatility that our producers are showcasing over the last few weeks has been.
I gotta tell you, if we get Dave here in the offseason, we can start doing a lot of creative things. He's into it.
I think
we
should just throw stuff out randomly
just
to see what he can find.
We're gonna have some fun with this. There's no question about it. All right, we got three more people up. A lot of new names too. I like that. We'll take all three of you before 1 o'clock, right here at 201-939-4513. Robert in Maryland was up first. Robert, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Lance? I'm all right. I'm gonna keep it real. You know, last year I did the same. I kept it real as far as the Giants. Like I said, the offensive line wasn't doing well last year. The issue with Victor Cruz as far as his injury, it shut him down a little bit. So I'm going to put the ball in you guys' hands. I love my Giants because we're going to have to make some changes. We're going to have to start rebuilding next year. You know, it is what it is.
Robert, hold on one second, pal. You don't have to rebuild. You're 8-4. You don't have to rebuild. You need to improve and retool. Sure. Let's not throw the word rebuild around.
We've been there and done that before. You know that.
No, but time out. You're 8-4. Why do you want to rebuild and tear it all down for?
Well, we got to start over next year. You know, just like this.
Well, start over with respect to what, though?
Go forward, you know, right now, and just start over next year.
Well, but Robert,
right now,
but Robert,
the
start.
The same thing that's happening this year happened last year.
Well, but Robert, start over with respect to what, though?
And the same thing didn't happen last year that happened this year. They were 8-4 this year. They won six games off last season. But Lance is right.
They barely won the games this year, man. They barely won the games this year, even putting up points. Come on now.
Let me ask you this. But Robert, you don't get brownie points in the National Football League for how many points you win a game by. All that matters is you're winning games.
Points in order to win. You got to put up points in order.
Correct.
To
but
be
but
successful.
But no. But here's what you have to do.
By one
but Robert,
point, and could they, we faced a team that was. I think they were like 0-9 or something. Was it Cincinnati or
Cleveland
stuff?
Browns? You're talking about?
I mean, come on. Now. We struggled on that. You know, I mean, I love my Giants, but I'm not even gonna go further with that.
Robert, hold on here. All right, let's rein you back in a little bit. Okay, I understand your point that the Giants are not lighting up the scoreboard. I get that. I think that's been well documented, but. because a team doesn't blow out the Cleveland Browns doesn't mean that you tear the entire roster down and you rebuild. I mean, that's not looking at it from a big picture perspective. Last time I checked, there's been close games for the Dallas Cowboys this year, and they're 11-1. And nobody's necessarily talking about how some of their games have come down to the wire, too. That's why I said it's about you win games. It's not the style points or how you go about winning the games.
Wait, so if you only won games by a few points this year, does that mean all the games you lost by a few points last year, do those count as wins then? I mean,
yeah,
come on.
I mean,
let's not be silly, Rob. Yeah. We're not telling you that everything's fantastic and, you know, sugar plums and roses and you know sunny meadows and fields here.
Rainbows and lollipops.
We aren't telling you that, but this team has a base of talent. Are there things they need to get better at? Yes. But do you have to start from scratch next year after being 8-4 through 12 games? Let's not go nuts and off the cuckoo's nuts. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, it's not going to be overnight that they're going to get better, man. So we got four games left. So out of the four games, I mean, it's going to be tight.
Well, it is.
It is.
I mean, I don't think anybody's expecting it to be any different. You're playing the toughest strength of schedule in the National Football League.
And
right
no
now.
One thought it was going to be easy heading into this year, man. Everyone thought this was going to be a tough year to make the playoffs. You know, we thought 9, 10, you know, somewhere around there. Who knows where the Giants will land. But look, Robert, you got four games left against four pretty darn good teams. You have three or four teams within two games of you in the playoff race. It's going to be fun. This is what December football is. It's rare when you have a season where your December games don't matter a whole lot because you're so far away from everybody else, unless you're the New England Patriots. And that doesn't happen to them every year. So there's still a lot of work to do, and enjoy it. This is why December in the NFL is fun, because you got to earn what you get, and that's what the Giants got to do these next four games. All right,
that's true, man. That's true. You're right.
Thanks,
right, Robert.
Appreciate the call. My friend, he wants to take the wrecking ball.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
get out of the way, folks.
Four
here comes,
games over 500 and
comes,
he's done.
Here comes Robert with the bulldozer.
Yeah, well, I mean, that to me is getting ahead of ourselves here. I think you got to take a step back, and you know, it is going to be a challenge, and there's going to be a number of tight races. I mean, look at Tampa Bay all of a sudden surging to making the NFC South quite interesting.
Tied with the Falcons, 7-5.
So, you know, now you have to account for Tampa Bay. If Atlanta now becomes a wild card team, that spices things up. The Packers have slowly regrouped a little. I know it's only two wins, but they're now becoming a little bit more relevant again.
And their schedule's not exactly tough either the last four games. And they have one more game against Detroit, which couldn't end up being a division champion type of situation.
Yes, and the Packers also play the Vikings. So it's unlikely that both of those teams are going to be able to win out in terms of the mathematics.
Impossible.
But it's possible that, well, right, if one of them tie or whatever it may be, I always account for that. Listen, there's been a lot of ties
this
season.
But if you tie, you don't win out.
No, you get a half a win and half a loss if you want to be politically correct. But the point I'm saying is that the Packers or the Vikings, at least one of those teams could very well get to 10
correct
wins.
Yes.
And
with Detroit.
With Detroit, and Tampa Bay right now could get to 11.
Which makes beating Detroit all the more important.
Yeah.
If that turns out to be a wild card tiebreaker down the road in a couple of weeks. In fact, right now, and this might sound kooky, I think beating Detroit in 2 weeks is more important than beating Dallas on Sunday night at this point.
Well, the Cowboys are three games up. So, I mean, even if you beat Dallas,
it ain't happening.
You're going to have to gain some ground elsewhere. But
it ain't happening.
If it does come down to a wild card and there's the difference between 9 wins versus 10 wins, that Dallas game could come back.
And remember, division record, though, not important this year, because you will never go to a tiebreaker with the Redskins because they have the tie on their resume.
Well, assuming that you don't tie moving forward. I'm just saying, listen, there's been a lot of fluky things that have happened this
fair
season. Can't rule everything out at this
point. Odds are your division record is not going to be a tiebreaker this year, because either you're going to beat Dallas by sweeping them 2-0 if you somehow win the division, okay? If you take on Washington, you can't be tied because they have, again, the tie in their ledger. The Giants don't. And Philly's out of it at this point. So right now, division record, believe it or not, and we talked so much about division record in the offseason and things like that, division record is almost irrelevant at this point in terms of tiebreakers.
But
which
conference
is weird.
Record could be relevant.
Conference
and that's
record
where the
could
game
be
against Dallas and Detroit comes
correct
into play. And all the others, I should say, too, because it's only NFC remaining opponents.
And I believe it's common opponents for conference record these days.
Yeah, that's
isn't
another
it
important
and
one,
and
too
think of it this way. When you go against the Lions, you better beat them. Because if you don't, you lose a tiebreaker head-to-head. Same with the Vikings. Same with the Packers. And then I don't know what their common opponent tiebreaker is with the Falcons and the Bucks
the
and things like that. I have to look at that. I have no
you
idea.
You have to go through each and every opponent.
And frankly, it's way too early because that can change a lot in the next four games,
very
too.
Very fluid situation.
But the bottom line, in my opinion, that game against Detroit in 2 weeks, more important than the Dallas game this week, which sounds counterintuitive and crazy, but if you really want to worry about making sure you get into the playoffs, beating Detroit more important than beating Dallas.
Well, because a tiebreaker could very well come into play. But it also goes to show you, based on what we're talking about, how fluid the playoff picture becomes week to week. You know, nobody was necessarily counting Tampa Bay in the equation, and now the Bucs have put together a few wins. So, you know, for everybody to sit here and say they need to beat this team, they need this amount of wins, let's see how things play out. But, you know, I don't know if you can throw out a number to me right now, John, and I would say anything's a lock at this point. Because there's a few teams that could still win 11 games. So that still complicates things.
By the way, I'm sorry. Common games is ahead of conference record if it's within the division, the tiebreaker. If it's a wild card tiebreaker, again, thank you to Dave Dominic, who's doing a great job over there. For the wild card tiebreaker, conference record is ahead of common games.
Well, but I'm talking about if let's say it came down to the Giants and the Lions.
Right.
A hypothetical, first they'd go to the head-to-head.
Obviously, yeah,
that would be the first one.
Of course.
And then there is no division record that you're going
to
equate.
It would go to conference.
It would go to conference. And that's why I said the Dallas game is important, because that's a conference game.
Correct. And it would also, by the way, be a common game. Because
the Lions are going to play the Cowboys, too, coming up. Yeah.
Bingo. So, in both those tiebreakers. But, again, it's never going to get down to that, though, because you only play the Lions once. So, head-to-head's going to determine that tiebreaker one way or another. Bottom line.
That's the easiest way to decipher a tie.
9-3-9.
Head-to-head.
In fact, you know, the only game, the only team where head-to-head is not going to be the determining tiebreaker, it's going to be for all three NFC North teams, right? It's going to be for Dallas if they somehow manage to win the division. Whichever team is still in it out of the NFC South.
Correct. Tampa Bay or Atlanta.
That's where conference
have to get down
record
to,
is going to get in the
correct.
Mix.
Conference record. Everybody else you've had at least a head-to-head matchup with.
Right.
But if you lose to the Lions, that means you lose the tiebreaker to all three NFC North opponents.
That's danger zone.
Yeah.
That's danger zone. 201-939-4513. Jason up in Vermont. He's up next. Jason, how are you?
All right. How are you guys?
Doing well, Jason. How are you?
One thing I got to say before my thing is a win is a win. Doesn't matter if it's by 30 or by 3. A win's a win.
Correct.
No argument here.
What I got to say is tight end. What is the problem with the defense? We cannot cover a tight end. I'm not too worried. With Dallas coming up, I guess they got the best tight end in the league.
Not anymore.
We can't stop them.
Look, Jason, here's the thing, and we talked about this briefly earlier in the show. I think one of the reasons that Lance, they're having some issues covering tight ends, they're playing a lot of man-to-man this year, and rightfully so. That's how great their cornerbacks are. You can take these wide receivers out of the game, but that means you're putting either your safeties, and if Landon Collins still has a minor weakness, I still think it's man-to-man coverage and playing in space, and then you have the linebackers, who, with any roster, linebackers are going to have trouble covering tight ends unless your linebacker's name is Luke Kuechly, all right? So I think that's the issue you run into, Jason and Lance. When you play a lot of man-to-man, that means you're manning up tight ends too, and that can be very challenging, especially against athletes like Ladarius Green and guys that are simply really good technicians like Jason Witt.
Yeah, if memory serves me correct, I think it was Jonathan Casillas was on Tyler Eifert in the Bengals game, if memory serves me correct, John, and he talked about this in the locker room, the fact that it caught him off guard because they weren't necessarily expecting that look, and then Eifert just ran a vertical route and had a step on him, and then all of a sudden Casillas has to play catch-up. So you're right, sometimes it's just they have favorable man-to-man matchups, and Ladarius Green, and I'm not trying to make excuses, Ladarius Green is 6'6". Okay? That is a nice size for a vertical threat. He goes up against Landon Collins. Even Landon Collins is with him every step of the way. Just think about the radius, the catch radius of a guy like Ladarius Green.
That's he's a great athlete, too, by
correct.
The way.
He adds such a new dimension to the Steelers' offense, just like what Tyler Eifert brought to the Bengals when he was healthy. So you have to account for that. I mean, I think it's the versatility, and sometimes the opposition does have a favorable matchup in that regard, and that's why it's been a challenge.
You got anything else for us, Jason?
Yeah, I just think that we're good against the run. I just think we need to stop Witten, and that would be the key to the game right there.
It'll certainly help, but I think stopping the running game is probably a little bit more important.
That you want to do first. You want to make sure that Dak Prescott is in unmanageable third downs. And when you say stop Jason Witten, Jason, what I would say is you want to stop Jason Witten on third down specifically, because Prescott loves to go to his tight end when he needs a big third down conversion. We've seen that game in and game out. That's when you need to be stingy on defense. If you're allowing Jason Witten to get the 5 or 6 yard catches underneath, that's not the killer. It's the fact that when they're facing a 3rd and 7 and a 3rd and 8 and you let Jason Witten get open for a 10 yard catch, that's when it comes back to haunt you.
Yeah, if you listen to the radio, you got Howard Cross saying, where's Witten? Watch him, and where's the running back? And then they get the first down. It's like crazy.
Yeah, thanks for the call, my
Cole
friend.
Beasley,
appreciate it.
Too, has been moving the chains as well for the Cowboys, so that's another player to be cautious of.
Thank you, Jason.
Slot.
201-939-4513. And by the way, Dave makes a good point. When they break down that NFC South, they will do the division tiebreaker first. So it's whatever team doesn't win the division, that team will go down to the Giants for common opponents. Common opponents, do you have conference record, Dave, for Giants versus Bucks and Falcons? Can you bring that up for me? And we'll touch on that before we say goodbye. But first, Travis.
I was just going to say real quickly, no, I can tell you Atlanta and Tampa Bay already met twice, and they split the season series.
No,
so the head-to-head wouldn't decide who wins the division. They'd have to then go to their next tiebreaker.
I could probably look that up on the
I'm just throwing
too.
That out there. Yep. I mean, for some reason, they met very earlier in the season. Specifically in week one, they met their first matchup. Tampa Bay won that. Then Atlanta returned the favor.
Travis and Rockaway, he'll wrap us up today. Travis, what's going on?
Hey, guys, how you guys doing? So first time caller, long time listener.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for coming aboard here.
I was calling because my concerns is, I understand, it's late in the season, so you can't move Will Beatty to right tackle and switch the whole process up. It's too late for that. But I was thinking maybe like how we did Eli Apple. You know, we set him down, let him get his mind refocused. I think if we put Will Beatty you slot him in at left tackle, and just see how that would work, you know. And then if Will Beatty is not doing so bad, I guess the chip guy could be Flowers. That's one point. The other point I wanted to make was too this loss is not a bad loss as people may think. I mean, 6-game winning streak, and that ain't happened since, I believe, 08, 09. So, you know what I mean? So you take that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, you know, you would rather, me personally, I would rather lose to the Steelers than lose to the Cowboys coming up next week.
Correct.
If anybody had to break the tie.
Yeah, but Travis, absolutely. You always choose to lose to the team in the other conference as opposed to Dallas or Detroit, for that matter.
Right. And then you know, on top of that, when you look at that game and you dissect it, thoroughly, like you see where the Giants, like can we, if we make the playoffs, which I believe we will, like it looked like we stand a good shot, far as like, you know, because you wonder that do we have the team this year to, you know, get in there and probably make some noise, and I believe we do. I mean, we won Super Bowls the last two that we won. Our running game wasn't the best, so it is about the moments that we have to capitalize on. But I also believe, when the offense is doing a play calling, like, I believe certain names have to be on it. Like, you have to say, you know what, this play is Cruz, this play is Shepard.
No, but Travis, that's not how it works. You don't call plays for specific players. You call plays, and then wherever the progression brings you on that play, that's where the quarterback will go with the football. They don't have plays designed for specific players. That's not how it works.
Okay, so do you think, like you take the Steelers, for instance, so you don't think their play calling kind of works like that? Like not saying, all right, look, if you're not open, I'm gonna stick on you. You're the main guy, you know.
Like, well, you have guys, Travis, on any given play that are the first option. And then it's the quarterback's decision how long he stays on that receiver or how long he goes to option number two, option number three, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But every play – you have a first read, a second read, a third read, a fourth read, a fifth read, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, depending how many guys are on the route, and that's how the play works. And it's the quarterback's decision how long he wants to stay with that specific player. But the play, every play in every playbook has more than one option. There's not one play out there that says you got to throw it to this guy.
And you need that versatility. And I'll give you an example, Travis. If you look at the Antonio Brown touchdown, you know, Roethlisberger runs out of the pocket. He's trying to extend the play, and Antonio Brown is running with Janoris Jenkins. I mean, that's the quarterback and the wide receiver reading one another, and Roethlisberger taking a chance that Brown's going to jump up and help out the quarterback. But, I mean, that play wasn't, well, Antonio run around in circles, try to get away from Janoris Jenkins, and I throw it in the back of the end zone. You know, it was on the fly, and he did a nice job extending the play, Big Ben.
Right, that's true. That's true. And I'm sorry. And just one more thing.
Sure.
So with that being the case, like is it safe to say that, you know, maybe the league have caught on to us as far as our offense? Because, you know, a lot of people I hear they're calling and so upset about, like they don't get it. It's like, look, we had firepower this year more than last year. How in the world is it that we can't capitalize and we can't do this and can't do that? Maybe you know, the other defense have caught on to us. It's just like the Seahawks one year when they looked at so unbeatable, you know, and it was like after a while, you know, years go on, a lot of information you get on the team, they just find you guys out.
I don't think there's enough evidence, Travis, to make that call right now. If we have the same conversation in 2 years and, you know, players change but the results are the same, then maybe we can have that conversation. But I think given the offensive success the last 2 years, I think we're too early in the process to make that sort of conclusion. We're a little late here, buddy. We got to go, all right?
All right. Thank you for the call.
Thank you, Travis. Appreciate it. All right. And you tell me if my math here is wrong. I know we're way over. Dominic wants to get the lunch. Now he's getting grumpy over there.
All
it's
right,
okay.
Relax. The salad bar is not going anywhere.
I know. Exactly. Nor is the ranch dressing. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, there you go. Congratulations. We're on the same page.
The Giants will lose tiebreakers to both the Falcons and the Bucks, and let me explain to you why. All three teams, and Dave, you listen too, and you could tell me if I'm wrong or not. This
He's
is how I do
about
the math.
The salad.
In my head.
I don't know if he could concentrate.
Yeah, he might be.
Yeah.
All three teams have played all their non-conference games, okay? So right now, all three teams are 5-3 in the NFC. And that would be the tiebreaker, correct? That's the first wildcard tiebreaker if you do not play head-to-head is conference record.
Yeah.
Right? So if all three teams are 5-3, right now the Giants are 8-4. Both the Falcons and the Bucks are 7-3. For these two, for
no,
these
seven
teams.
7-5.
7-5, sorry.
7-5.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Oh, they're 7-5. So if the Giants were to finish tied with either the Bucks or the Falcons, or both the Bucks and the Falcons, the Giants, let's say, would go 2-2 the rest of the way to finish 10-6. And these two teams would finish 3-1 the rest of the way to go 10-6. Since every game remaining on each team's schedule are all in conference, the Giants' conference record would be 7-5. But the NFC South's conference record
would
be 6-3.
Yeah.
So the Giants would lose, if my little theoretical math equation here is correct, would lose tiebreakers to both the Bucks and the Falcons, mostly because they've had so much success against those AFC North teams where they're 3-1, while the Bucks and the Falcons are 2-2 in their non-conference games. Therefore, if the Falcons and Bucks pick up a game on the Giants and they're head-to-head in the wild card, the Giants will lose that tiebreaker.
Well, and that's why I said watch out for that race, because Atlanta and Tampa Bay already played one another, so they're not going to knock each other out. They could both very well finish out with wins, and then that could complicate matters.
Correct. One of them will win the division, but then the other team would still remain with the same record as the Giants, and the tiebreaker would still be conference record, in which the Giants would end up losing to that NFC South team. So the way you look at it, the Giants, honestly, right now, are in as bad of a position as possible in terms of tiebreakers. They will lose the head-to-head to the Vikings, lose the head-to-head to the Packers. They'll lose the conference tiebreaker to either NFC South team if they finish tied with them in the standings, and the Lions are pending.
Yep.
So if they lose to the Lions next week, if my math is right, and I think it is, they will have bad
tiebreakers.
Well, we know
they definitely lose the tiebreakers to everybody in the NFC North.
Correct, and I'm pretty sure,
I
will double-check my NFC South thing, but I'm pretty sure that's pretty foolproof. I don't see how I'm wrong
in
that situation.
Well, the way you explained it makes sense to me.
Right. So unless they beat the Lions, the Giants will lose pretty much every single wild card tiebreaker out there.
That's why I always say every game is important here down the stretch.
No,
I mean, there's really no point to saying this one's more important. They're all important. Four games left. You got to take care of business if you want to get in. It's as simple as that.
Finish with one more win than the other guy, and everything will take
then
care
you don't
of
have
itself.
To worry about tiebreakers.
No question.
Yep.
Everybody, thank you for joining us right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. Tomorrow, it will be – are you in tomorrow?
Yes, I'm in tomorrow.
You guessed your basketball schedule. Right. I wanted to make sure before I said it. So tomorrow
that's what I said. You should be careful before tomorrow, you tease. Just say there's a show tomorrow. I don't even know why you're worried about who's hosting.
It'll be Meadow and Deal. Well, some people don't like you, so they don't want to tune in when you're hosting. Okay. Or they really love Tino, or they hate Tino. So there you go.
Well, that's why I said avoid all host names, and then you don't have to worry about it.
There's a show tomorrow at noon.
There we
Tune
go.
In.
See? Nice and easy.
I promise you it'll be wonderful because Dave Dominic will be here. Thank you for joining us, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody.
Have a good one.